It's Tuesday, March 23rd, and this is not how back to normal is supposed to feel. We start here.
The entire building is surrounded. You need to surrender.
In the deadliest mass shooting since the pandemic began, a gunman opens fire in a Colorado supermarket.
People are just grocery shopping. They're in there getting their COVID shots. And the next thing you know, they are running for their lives.
We'll get you caught up on what we know. Is there such a thing as too much too late?
The Biden officials are a little bit coy about supply.
A fourth vaccine maker says it's ready for American approval, but is it Americans who will need it? And there are more migrants than 2 years ago, but none of the crowds from 2 years ago.
We're told that the migrants have avoided being in big, massive caravans and instead are in smaller groups.
Our team in Mexico says everything you thought you knew about caravans has changed. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. For the last year, there really haven't been any gathering spaces in most communities in this country. In a given week, there aren't many places you can actually count on visiting. Maybe the gas station, the grocery store. Well, yesterday, a grocery store in Boulder, Colorado, became the site of a mass shooting.
Reports of a gunman in a parking lot of a grocery store then moving inside. And there are reports at this hour of multiple victims.
In a state that has seen several mass shootings in recent history. Let's go straight to ABC's Kana Whitworth. Kana, details were kind of scarce for several hours yesterday as you were reporting on this. What have we learned?
Well, Brad, authorities have now said that there were 10 fatalities in this shooting, an absolutely devastating number.
My heart goes out to the victims of this incident. And I'm grateful for the police officers that responded. And I am so sorry about the loss of Officer Tally.
We also learned that among the killed was a Boulder police officer, Eric Tally.
Officer Tally responded to the scene, was the first on the scene. And he was fatally shot.
And they say that he died a hero. This is just gut-wrenching. You may not know this, but Colorado is my home state. It is hard
really?
For me to cover stories like this. And you think, as you mentioned, this is the one place we still go, right? The grocery store. It's 2:30 in the afternoon. People are just grocery shopping. They're in there getting their COVID shots. And the next thing you know, they are running for their lives.
These were people going about their day, doing their food shopping. And their lives were cut abruptly and tragically short by the shooter, who is now in custody.
Well, and so do we know, because police were really tight-lipped about the actual TikTok of all this. Are we getting a sense from sources exactly like how this unfolded on the ground?
Right. So authorities are being tight-lipped on this investigation. They said that their crime scene investigators had just entered the building. But what we were hearing from witnesses is that someone walked into the store. They had a long gun. Said nothing, started shooting.
Looks like we have an active shooter, the white male, middle-aged.
At first, I heard like a loud bang, so I kind of thought like a shelf fell over or something like that.
But then, within a second or two, there was just a cadence of pop, pop.
Many people say they heard multiple gunshots, and they just started running for their lives. Some of them had to escape out the back of the store.
Probably like 50 people that were running in the back there.
We all just rushed and jumped about 5 feet down from the loading dock.
I said, just run, don't look, just run. And we ran, we started running, and there was at least two shots fired at us as we were running to the front of the store.
We got people down on the ground.
Inside, inside, back of the store is where I last saw him.
As this was all unfolding, someone was there live streaming the event.
He was just shooting at the cops a second ago.
Our officers shot back and returned fire. We do not know where he is in the store.
We're seeing multiple agencies responding, up to 15 different agencies responding. We're seeing firefighters help out. They use their ladder. They put it on the roof of the grocery store.
The entire building is surrounded. You need to surrender.
We saw SWAT team ramming the front doors. All different agencies responding, and all of us, thousands of people watching this on a live stream.
The man led away in handcuffs. He's shirtless. He's wearing shorts or underwear, it appears. He's got a really bloody right leg.
If you or anyone was watching this yesterday, you saw authorities take a man out of the store wearing handcuffs, bleeding down his leg, shirtless. It's 37 degrees there. The district attorney now saying that they do have the alleged shooter in custody and that that person did have to receive medical attention at the hospital, but they're not confirming who it is.
Well, and with so few details, I imagine it's too early to establish a motive. But I mean, were there other people involved? Are the police sensing that their suspect is like the only person involved? What was behind this mass shooting?
Well, so again, police are saying that they do have the alleged shooter in custody, right? They're also saying that there was an incident about 3 miles away right after this happened. They say there were reports of an armed and dangerous person in the area, and they ordered everyone there to shelter in place. They investigated that. They said it was not tied to this incident at King Soopers at all. But essentially, you know, everyone in Boulder, including the students on campus at CU Boulder, were on edge for hours on a Monday afternoon.
You've been living in this area many years. You come to this King Soopers almost every day. You live about a mile away.
Yeah.
Did you ever expect something like this to happen?
No, and I'm just thankful that I didn't have both of my kids with me. I just don't even know if we would have been able to get away in time, you know?
And as evidence that the people of Colorado and people across this country don't want to see things like this happen anymore, the district attorney there is saying, you know, thoughts and prayers are not enough at this point.
But from my perspective, there's more for us to do than just give them our thoughts and prayers.
And they said they will take every painstaking step in this investigation so that this person will be brought to justice and that hopefully we don't see this again.
Yeah, clearly going to be more details coming out through the day. Just as clearly, we are going to see renewed debates about mass shootings and about guns in this country. Right as the pandemic perhaps winding down, another mass shooting to remind us some of the problems that have been here for a long time. All right, Kana Whitworth, thank you.
Hey, thanks, Brad.
Let's do a quick numbers check. As of this morning, 25% of Americans have gotten at least one dose of a COVID vaccine. Nearly 14% are fully vaccinated, meaning at the very least, they are virtually assured to not get severely sick from COVID.
And while deaths continue to drop, they remain at elevated levels. And
at the same time, 1,000 people are still dying every day. Every day, another 1,000 Americans dead.
Increasingly, states are seeing a growing proportion of their COVID-19 cases attributed to variants.
55,000 Americans are getting infected every day.
Taken together, these statistics should serve as a warning sign for the American people.
So when we say this is not over until a sizable portion of Americans are vaccinated, that's exactly what we mean. Well, around the world, one of the most important vaccines has already been the AstraZeneca vaccine. It's cheap, it's easy to transport, but in the U.S., not only has the AstraZeneca vaccine not been approved, it hasn't even been evaluated yet. Regulators have been waiting for data from American test subjects.
Breaking news in the race to vaccinate. Oxford AstraZeneca releasing data from their U.S. trial saying it's 79% effective against symptomatic COVID-19.
Well, yesterday, AstraZeneca announced, we've got the data you've been looking for. Several important developments on the pandemic to update you on this morning. So let's go to the two voices who have really guided us through so much of this. Sony Salzman from our medical unit and Flaherty, who's been covering vaccine distribution. And so let's get into it. Sony, let's start with you. Is the AstraZeneca vaccine safe? Like, I think that's the biggest question here. What does the data say that they're unveiling here?
Yeah, thanks, Brad. So yesterday was a good day for AstraZeneca, and I think that they needed it. Yesterday, what the company released is a big trial based mostly in the United States and also in Latin America.
So right at the efficacy data, good results, 78.9% vaccine efficacy at preventing symptomatic disease.
That trial found that the vaccine was 79% effective against symptomatic disease. And again, 100% against severe illness, hospitalization.
Importantly, and this is a quote from the DSMB, no evidence of disproportionate risk of thrombosis.
Now, importantly, that trial also specifically looked at these thrombotic events, those blood clots, some cause for concern in many European countries. They brought in a neurologist to specifically look at this, and they didn't find any evidence of increased blood clots in this large trial.
And then overnight, a government agency actually said they're not positive AstraZeneca wasn't providing some outdated trial data, which, I mean, that's what this FDA process is all about, right? Double-checking this data. So with that, and Flaherty, you cover government agencies. At what point could AstraZeneca actually get that emergency use authorization?
So, Brad, this process is going to take several weeks. I mean, this is where the company has to file paperwork with the FDA. The FDA has to hold meetings. An independent advisory committee has to look at whether or not they have questions about safety and efficacy. It's going to be a while. But, you know, if it gets approved, the company has said 30 million doses. That's on top of the doses that have already been ordered to deliver to the American people. So it just gives us an added cushion there. And of course, we're going to want to, you know, provide doses overseas to help vaccinate other countries. So
right, people have been saying like, let's just give it to other countries. Like, we're going to have enough then, so let's just give it to other countries.
Well, but you have to be careful about that because President Biden has set up contracts so that we have at least 400 million doses by the end of May.
Is there the sense that the U.S. would have enough supply from the other three vaccines that the AstraZeneca supply could all be shipped overseas? Would that be a plan from the administration?
I wouldn't jump to that conclusion at this point. Obviously,
we don't have that in hand. I mean, that's just the plan.
We are not sitting on a secret dose of supplies.
We've talked about this before, that manufacturing proteins is a little different than manufacturing widgets. And, you know, the Biden officials are a little bit coy about supply.
Since April 1st is the end of next week, do you think that J&J will have that 20 million shots? Can you give us?
You know, with the J&J vaccine, we were promised 20 million doses by the end of this month. Only 4.5 have rolled out.
Yeah, I'm not going to give you precise numbers. Obviously, this is a ramped up manufacturing process. We're working with them very closely.
We've asked the White House what's going on, and they don't have an answer for us yet.
But then Sony, when we talk about all these different, like, so at this point, we'll be talking about Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson. Now Americans are going to start getting familiar with the AstraZeneca vaccine. How many differences are there? And, like, at one point, is it almost too many to keep track of?
You know, yeah. So AstraZeneca, if it is eventually authorized, it would be the fourth vaccine. And it has a slightly different technology than Pfizer and Moderna. It's actually more similar to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. That being said, all the vaccines are slightly different. And we may at some point down the line find that there's advantages or disadvantages for certain groups of people. But it's good to have a wide range of options. And there are some unanswered questions.
You know, they're on the phones. Hang up, another call. Hang up, another call.
Dr. Steve Plimpton's phone lines are ringing off the hook with hundreds of parents hoping to enroll their child in the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine trial.
For example, the vaccines are being tested in younger and younger people.
You know, we consider, not in a derogatory sense, but we consider kids vectors.
In young adults, in teenagers, in children, we don't have that full data yet. So it could be that one of these vaccines works particularly well in children, and we want to make sure we have it on hand.
Well, okay, so then let's talk about, we talk about the vaccines themselves. Can we talk about who's eligible to get the vaccine? So the plan was, the Biden administration said, look, by May 1st, anyone will theoretically be eligible. Maybe you haven't gotten it yet, but you'll be eligible. There are states going ahead and expanding eligibility as we speak. Yesterday, West Virginia said, literally any adult who wants a vaccine, you are now eligible. I don't care if you're 65, 55, 25, doesn't matter. And is that effective, or is that a recipe for, I don't know, chaos?
Well, I think it depends on the state. I mean, there are indications a state like West Virginia has done extraordinarily well.
Let's go, West Virginia, and absolutely let's get everybody in this state vaccinated.
And they've done it by relying on these local pharmacies that come to people to get them vaccinated instead of relying on the people going out to go find vaccinations.
Happening right now, Governor Doug Ducey is holding a press conference after making the state health department announcement today that the vaccine is going to be available and open to people 16 years of age and older. And this
But I think it's something we talk a lot about in the newsroom. What does this mean when all these states are racing to open up eligibility? And you really run the risk of chaos and disarray with this.
We do have friends, a couple of friends, that are simply not able to stand in line for any length of time.
Because you don't want medically vulnerable people standing in line at a mass vaccination site.
Sylvia Plax turned away from her confirmed appointment because of what health officials were calling a scheduling glitch.
You don't want people trying to crash the state vaccination registration system. You want to be able to pick and choose your eligibility groups. And there are indications that that process works a lot smoother. The other question I have is, are some of these states opening up eligibility because it's a signal of vaccine hesitancy. When I see that Mississippi is opening it up to people, I have to wonder, have you hit all the priority groups, the most vulnerable people, or did you give up? Or maybe there's an indication that people are hesitant to step up and get their shot. We don't have that answer. I think
oh,
the
like
governors
if, like
would
if you
say,
don't have all the seniors yet, but you're worried that you're just going to start having doses go unused. Let's go ahead and open it up to somebody else.
Right. That's been the fear from the beginning of this, is that any doses go unused. But I think the flip side of that, when you open up eligibility, eligibility does not mean availability. Everybody wants to hear that their number's been called and that their eligibility has been opened up. But if the supply's not there, you're going to face some pretty angry people.
It really is going to be a race between the vaccine and the potential surge. So the more people we get vaccinated, that's the reason why the good part of this equation is that every day we're getting 2 to 3 million people vaccinated in this country.
At the same time, there is another school of thought that's like, we just need to get vaccines in arms. You know, every day that goes by that we, you know, stall or delay or we don't have vaccines out there is another day that the virus can spread and replicate and continue to you know, infect people. So it's a difficult balance.
Right. And the vaccine hesitancy you're talking about, that is what makes so many of these regulations so high stakes. Because if you get it wrong, even if, say, not that many people get blood clots, but some did, that creates hesitations, not even just about these vaccines, but about ones in the future. It's a big concern for regulators. All right. Ann Flaherty, Sony Salzman. Thank you both.
Thank you, Brad.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, it's not a caravan anymore. It's more like a UPS flowchart. Our team is at Mexico's southern border. We're back in a bit.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the U.S. has actually already agreed to send millions of doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine away, some to Canada, which has already really purchased all the vaccines it needs, but also to Mexico, which is seeing a surge of infections. One of the questions has been, is the U.S. just doing this to be a good neighbor, or are we doing this because the White House desperately wants help slowing down these mass migrations?
Now that the crisis at the border, a record number of unaccompanied minors now in the custody of the U.S. Border Patrol.
And ABC News has learned the number of them held for more than 10 days in facilities not meant for kids has skyrocketed, a five-fold increase in the last week.
Yesterday, we told you what the border crisis looks like at the U.S.-Mexico border. Well, if the number of migrants fleeing across the southern border is going to go down to a more manageable level for the Department of Homeland Security, that process actually starts much further south. So ABC sent a team into southern Mexico to see what's happening there. We got ABC's Marcus Moore on the road with us now. Where are you, Marcus?
Brad, we're in Palenque, Mexico, which is about 3 hours from Mexico's southern border with Guatemala. It's a town in the state of Chiapas.
And I remember a couple of years ago, you were also reporting in southern Mexico, Central America, and you were alongside these huge caravans. Well, now the numbers are the same, even higher than a couple years ago. But is that the way to look at it? Like, is that what it still looks like on the ground in this scenario?
No, not at all, actually. I mean, it's just the opposite.
And I want you to see the line of men, women, and children that have gathered here in Sayula. They are waiting for buses that we understand may be coming to take some people to the next town that's about 50.
During the migrant caravan, we saw people climbing onto 18-wheelers passing by and also jumping onto truck beds.
Put her in the seat.
No, put her on the floor.
No, it's too hot on the floor.
I have not seen that. In fact, we're told that the migrants have avoided being in big, massive caravans and instead are in smaller groups because the caravans are easily targeted and can be broken up.
Hola, señor. Me llamo Marcos. Me llamo Marcos.
So instead, we have seen them up to about 10 people or so just walking along the narrow two-lane highways here in this part of the state. And so that's one of the remarkable differences that I've noticed on this trip. But the motivations are still the same.
Marlon.
Marlon. They're coming from places like Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador. Most of the people we've met this week have been from Honduras.
Vamos, es duro, no es fácil.
Sí, claro, es duro.
Mis hijos en Honduras y pues triste la situación.
Sí, muy triste.
Many of them been on the road for days.
¿Cuántos días ha estado caminando?
6 días.
So you've been walking for 6 days.
Well, you know, these are people who didn't have the money or don't have the money to pay a smuggler to get them across the border. And you know, we met some young migrants who actually slept on the street last night because they couldn't get into a shelter that was full here in Palenque.
Well, so then, if you're saying if you got no money, you're still walking alongside the road, and yet there's a ton of people who are clearly not doing that. So it sounds like what you're saying is the whole infrastructure of this move up through Mexico has actually become like more efficient, like less expensive perhaps than a couple of years ago, and moves you quicker. Is that essentially what you're seeing?
Absolutely. I mean, we saw that yesterday at a river crossing.
There's a big sign up there that says "Bienvenido a Guatemala." Just under that sign, there are dozens of people waiting to board these boats and go across the river into Mexico.
When we got there, we saw dozens upon dozens of men, women, and children who had been in Guatemala. They crossed over on boats and then were loaded into taxi cabs.
Well, they all got in cabs.
I lost count of how many taxi cabs I saw.
All of the cabs are full.
Parked there, and then the ones that would leave, and then here would come another fleet waiting for the next group. And it was really... It seemed to be an organized operation, one in broad daylight and no authorities anywhere in sight that we saw.
We're not wanting to bring any undue attention to ourselves. You know, we're not showing the coyotes who are clearly operating here. And
you know, the Mexican government has said that they would increase the manpower to stop the flow of migrants. But you get a real sense, and we saw it with our own eyes, if that's what they're trying to do. They can't be everywhere all the time.
Well, and that was my last question for you, Marcus, because I remember when the Trump administration told Mexico publicly, we need you to stop people from coming into your country. And I remember the common reaction was like, sorry, I mean, if the U.S. can't keep people from crossing the border, what makes you think that Mexico is going to be able to do any better? And yet, in some cases, the Mexican government was actually very effective at this. Are we seeing that type of effort again now, 2 years later, to process people at their southern border?
Well, we have seen their efforts in the town of Tapachula, which is about 200 miles from where we are, a mighty presence there with a number of officials from immigration enforcement. But we have heard from a number of people who said they saw the police officers and yet they let them go through.
Police in Mexico wearing riot gear faced off with migrants fleeing deep poverty and gang violence in Central America. The caravan of an estimated 3,000 or so people, many of them families with children, broke through a fence near Mexico's border with Guatemala.
If you were to compare what we saw a few years ago and you saw thousands of people en masse walking towards the border, that's not what we're seeing right now.
¿Tienen un poco de miedo del futuro o no?
people are traveling in smaller groups. And it is clear to me and clear to our team here that people are still getting across, Brad.
I asked if she's afraid at all about the future. And she said, no, not really. That they have faith in God.
And they seemingly will continue to get across the border, no matter what kind of efforts are used to stop them.
I was talking to somebody about the people moving operation. I said, it sounds like more of like an assembly line. And that person said, oh, no, it's like UPS now. This is now a logistics issue. That is why you're seeing so many people in smaller groups arriving. Marcus, so glad you're there giving us a ground eye view. Thanks so much.
Brad, thank you. Always good to talk to you.
And one last thing. We talked about the issues with vaccines earlier. Well, health experts will tell you one of the simplest questions from vaccine skeptics has been, what's in it for me? Well, how about free donuts?
Starting today, Krispy Kreme is upping the incentives for folks to get their COVID-19 vaccine.
Yesterday, Krispy Kreme announced a promotion in which anyone who's been vaccinated can present their vaccination card and get a free donut. And they can do this every day through the end of the year.
Donuts.
It makes you wonder, why aren't way more companies doing stuff like this? If the key to restarting the economy is ending the pandemic, and the key to ending the pandemic is vaccinations, well then, these aren't just donuts. This is an investment. Plus, of all the companies to be invested in public health right now, what, the national donut chain is first in line? Really?
Fattening.
Well, on the local level, several businesses have already been doing stuff like this for weeks. Updown Arcade Bar in Des Moines, Iowa is offering free game tokens to any vaccinated customer. Briano's Deli in Eagan, Minnesota has been giving 10% off orders, and rather than mandating employees to get the shot, the boss is offering a crisp $100 bill to any employee who does. This owner says he's lost $500,000 in the last year because of lack of business. So to him, a few thousand bucks to get neighbors off the fence is well worth it. Actually, a new report yesterday showing how much weight people have actually gained at home, especially millennials. And I was just going to say, if you see me with a glazed look in my eye for a lot of 2021, it's because I was out getting my daily donut. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.